What we are going to talk about today is tragedy and real hope. What is real hope and how do you define it? We bring this issue up in light of the sorry state of today's planet and the increasing likelihood, indeed, we would probably call it the increasing inevitability of a series of global disasters. In our calculation, by the year 2050, you stand an excellent chance of losing 3 to 4 billion of our fellow passengers here on spaceship Earth. Yes, it is that bad. Where do we need to start? Climate change, which is a subsidiary of the destruction of the biological foundations of life. In other words, if you solved climate change tomorrow, which these people sure as hell aren't, you would still have a existential crisis for life on this planet. However, our leaders are feeling, apparently, that climate change and the global environmental crisis are not going to kill us quickly enough, and they have embarked on today the largest nuclear arms race in the history of planet Earth. If aliens are looking at us, they would be rather puzzled at a species which is facing extinction because of environmental issues, developing weapons which can exterminate all life on Earth rather quickly. And aside to that, just in case we're not having enough fun, by the way, relating to the Wuhan lab in China, and we don't pretend to know where the coronavirus came from, whether it came from animals, bats, trees, whatever, the Wuhan lab, we don't know. We're not going to say that. But the Wuhan lab issue has brought up an issue that has concerned us for a long time, which is the failure to have an international system of controls on biological warfare. The Biological Warfare Convention is a step forward. It's better than nothing, but it does not prevent, many people would be shocked to know this, it does not prevent people from developing the most heinous kinds of biological weapons. And with the invention of biotechnology, the CRISPR technology, and technology such as that, we now have the potential to develop super anthrax and super COVID and all sorts of other good stuff like that. It is not illegal, folks. So there's a big to-do about was China or not China pursuing so-called gain-of-function research in developing biological weapons. We weren't in the Wuhan lab. We don't claim to know. But it is entirely legal for them to do so, and we wouldn't be at all surprised if the U.S. government and good part of the governments of the world are developing a gain-of-function research. Not only that, with the development of CRISPR and the development of new technology, low-cost, high technology in biological weapons and engineering, we can now have the privatization of mass murder on an enormous scale, where your local division of ISIS, the Islamic State, fill in the blanks of your local nutcase organization, can get a rather limited amount of money and can start developing their own bioweapons for deployment. Yes, sir, right there in your community. Yes, that is possible. So we have an apocalyptic landscape in the real world, and we have babble of politicians claiming they're doing something when, of course, they are not. They are failing. They are not doing what is needed to be done. And we have a very negative force in the world, American imperialism, which is making it very difficult for the world to come together. We're not saying that America is the root of all the world's evils, and if America is bad, China must be good. No, we're not going down that road. But American imperialism is a force that's completely out of control. It is American imperialism, not Chinese imperialism, not Iranian imperialism, not Russian imperialism, that spent $8 trillion since 2001 on a global campaign of war and destruction that killed 2 million people and made 40 million people into refugees and so on and so forth. And it is also American imperialism that produced the single largest source of greenhouse gases that are now up there in the atmosphere. Yes, America is number one. You got it. Number one in the production of greenhouse gases that are killing the planet. And now China has since surpassed America in the annual production of greenhouse gases, but it's important to give credit where credit is due. And in terms of the total amount of greenhouse gases emitted and put in the atmosphere to kill the planet, America is number one. You got it. Now, let's deal with how people can or should try to deal with existential threats. We don't have a happy little solution to how you out there listening to this lecture are going to have a happy life. We don't. So we just want to give you a heads up about that. What we do want to talk about is reality in history, reality of how people look at life. How do you come to terms with tragedy? If somebody's just had their legs knocked off in a car accident, is it worth going on? Is it worth going on living, and so on and so forth? We don't claim to have answers for each and every individual people. Now, what we can talk about is some basic beliefs, which those of you out there may or may not agree with. We believe that God exists. We believe that God is just. Now, what we're not doing here is setting up a rating service on world religions. This one's better than that one, or whatever. But we are trying to do, in a world conflicted with religious conflict, to try to put up some common values that the great religions of the world believe in down through history. And one of those common values is justice, that there is a sense of justice. And the sense of justice, very, very important, is connected to a long-term view of life, a life that goes out millions of years into the future. This goes back, if you look at the walls of some of the Egyptian tombs, you see Osiris as the judge of the dead, okay? So this is a very old concept. And in Christianity, in Islam, in Hinduism, in many, if not most, aspects of Buddhism, in aspects of other religions, and we're not going to discuss all the different religions in the world, we are not, there is not time, there is a concept of life going on, and life here being a test, so to speak. Now, when we look at life, you need to understand the concept of life is responsibilities. All religions demand responsibilities, okay? That and those responsibilities, by the way, are always connected to community. That religion takes place in the context of community. Human life takes place in the concept of community. Now, what do we mean by community? What we mean by community is the state, is government. That is the essence of community. In America, there's this lunatic false dialectic between community and the state. This is lunatic and a false dialectic. That's all you need to say about that. Community is the state. In some neoliberal and other and conservative circles in America, there's an attempt to go back to, well, there was a time before big government and everybody relied on the church and that was great. Well, most people would not regard the Dark Ages as great. They really wouldn't. But let's just take that argument at face value. People like this are obviously totally and completely ignorant of the most elemental aspects of Christian history. In the Middle Ages in Europe, the church was a part of the state, okay? You paid a church tax, and many liberals in America are always shocked when they go to Europe to find, even today, in socialist countries such as Norway and Sweden and even Germany, there is a church tax, which is a legacy of all that, you see. So the church was the state. There was never a time in history where there was a dialectic between religion and the state. Religion was integrated into the state. Now, there have been conflicts between religion and the state, and we're certainly not going to say that there haven't been very unfair persecutions of religions. There have. But the concept of human society is religion and the state have been integrated, and the concept of community is a part of that. So looking at the world today, in face of apocalypse, how does life have meaning? Life has meaning in terms of how you, the citizen, deal with the coming disaster. What are you doing? And we are not going to get into, as I said before, in recommending one religion over another religion. We personally admire Islam, the classical version of Islam. No, not the Saudi Wahhabi version of Islam. Though Islam needs to reform itself in terms of its treatment of women today and a number of other areas, which were very controversial and we're not going to get into. But we are not going to say you should adopt Islam and you should not adopt Christianity and so on and so forth. There are basic moral values in Islam, in Christianity, in Buddhism, in Hinduism that do relate to a spirit of community. Now, a existential question in today's world, which did not affect previous generations, is the issue of the biological foundations of life. Other societies throughout history have created environmental disasters, so that's not new. But never before have they threatened the biological foundations of life itself. So the number one issue for any moral people is, you got to ask, what are you doing to stop the destruction of the biological foundations of life? So you see, responsibility relates to politics. It relates to what are you doing in terms of politics, and that's not an easy thing to answer. Now, another responsibility involves cooperation on an international level. We are all links in a chain. We're not isolated countries. There is no America first, China first, Brazil first, Mexico first, whatever. Those are lunatic delusions. We are linked together in a global economy, and that's just the way things are. Now, this is not the world's happiest situation. Everybody says, let's cooperate. Well, this means cooperating with governments who are frequently tyrants, war criminals, so on and so forth. But there's a greater good of the need to cooperate. And one thing we don't need is a country as morally bankrupt as America running around to shove its version of human rights down everybody else's throat. That's a big problem. Yes, it is. That's a big problem. We are totally opposed to issues like torture, so which America, by the way, promotes, but which should, in a moral world, be abhorred by all the world's people, and so on and so forth. So we are concerned about human rights, but there's a larger issue of, if we don't cooperate on an international level, we aren't going to exist. And that also means getting a grip on the arms race. It means getting a grip on the biological arms race. If COVID taught us anything, that would seem to be a priority. But no one seems to have learned anything about this. Our world seems more bitterly divided than ever. So we go back to where we started. I mean, what is the issue of hope for an individual person? The issue of hope for you today is the same as it's been since the beginning of time in history, which is, it's not an issue of rights. You don't have rights. There's this whole article from the 18th century in Europe that people have rights. Here's the way it really works. People have responsibilities. All the great religions of the world point out responsibilities. You have an obligation, dharma in Hinduism. And again, we're not endorsing or not endorsing all these different concepts, but we're just making some basic point. Moses did not come down with the Bill of Rights from the mountain. He came down with the Ten Commandments, the obligation of what you had to do, and so on and so forth. All religions talk about responsibilities. You can't have rights without responsibilities. This is a delusion. You don't start with rights. You start with responsibility. And insofar as people fulfill responsibilities, they earn rights. That's the correct way to look at all this. It's a question of rights and responsibilities and getting the proper balance. So you need to think of, how are you helping other people? How are you building, trying to stop the political dynamics of what is coming here? You see, the issue is the state. The issue is government. The issue is politics. Ralph Nader came up with a great comment. Some kids told him, we're not turned on by politics. Nader came up with a great response. You may not be turned on by politics, but that's not going to prevent politics from turning on you. Indeed, that is so true, because you can't run away. You can't run away. And all around the world, particularly in America, you see governments, as American imperialism collapses, it's becoming more and more desperate, particularly at home. And there's a bipartisan agreement to restrict civil liberties and crush civil liberties and crush dissent. The liberals and conservatives hate each other's guts, but they do agree on that we should curb. There's some brave people who are fighting this, but in general, there's a consensus that we should move towards a totalitarian state. They swear up and down they're not doing this, but that is what they're doing. So you have to look at the issue of responsibilities. That's the issue, and how you participate in that. We don't have any clever little concept of successful living and so on and so forth. Indeed, when you look at the death toll that's coming, your life, you may be on the losing end of that business situation. You may be. For you, you may have, your life may turn into a nightmare, may already be a nightmare. It could get a lot worse, and you could end up being a fatality. For you, the great video game of capitalist life or whatever system you're living on, it could be game over. You just didn't luck out, okay? So we're not going to tell you that you're going to be able to avoid that. And you can't run away. So you have to participate. And you go back in many ways to the concept of stoicism, that you serve at your post and you do what is necessary. And what happens or doesn't happen to you here is not the end result, is not the be-all and the end-all. No, no system of philosophy, no system, serious system of religion and philosophy suggests that. It is trying to build a just society here, but very important, life here is a very short phenomenon, and it is the karma and the dharma of where you end up on the system of the samsara, reincarnation, so on and so forth, heaven and hell, where you end up. That is the frame of reference. So you need to get your mind around that concept, not that listening to this lecture or buying that book is going to, you know, be a clever little thing that's going to help you. We don't say people shouldn't try to survive, but you need to think in terms of the larger picture, because big troubles are coming. And it's not a guarantee. There is no guarantee in the world religions that you might not end up being a martyr. The question is, if you're going to die, you're going to die for what? Or are you leading your life in a logical manner to gain heaven, if you're a Muslim, a Christian, whatever, or to gain advancement in the cosmic landscape of the samsara, when you are reincarnated? These are realities, and we shall discuss more of this in future lectures, but this is a summary for this lecture today.